and you're joined now by Greg Lehman, Indigenous Tasmanian researcher and writer, in our regular series looking at figures from your Indigenous history in Tasmania who you might not have known about. Now, one thing I do know is that one of the earliest sort of and strongest relationships in Tasmania were between Indigenous women and the sealers. And the woman we're talking about today, I guess her story typifies that, Greg, or is typical of those relationships. So good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
Now, her name is Wara Te Mota Te Yenya. Have I said that right?
Very good.
It's very long.
My advice to people if they want to pronounce Tasmanian Aboriginal words is to say them really quickly, and you'll get away with it. Wara Te Mota Te Yenya.
There you go.
I should say the main relationship was actually between Aboriginal women and seals, and that's what got the sealers involved.
Okay.
One of the first major exploitative industries in Tasmania before whaling was set up in the Bass Strait Islands between a fairly ragtag bunch of outlaws and miscreants, mostly from the colony in Sydney, but also the industry attracted people from as far away as New Zealand, Tahiti, all across the Southern Pacific. The commodity was seal skins, and to a lesser extent, oil boiled down from their blubber. But seal skins were exported from Tasmania back to Sydney and then to the markets in Europe in huge numbers. Something like, I think it was about 250,000 seals were harvested within the space of about 10 or 15 years, and the industry itself collapsed because of over-exploitation in less than 25 years. The Australian fur seal and New Zealand fur seal were pushed almost to the point of extinction, and the elephant seal, which used to be found on remote Tasmanian beaches and offshore islands, has never returned.
And what were Indigenous women's role in that industry?
Well, the interesting thing about Tasmanian Aboriginal culture was that there was a division of labour, if you like, or a control of resources that was split between men and women. And by and large, women had responsibility and therefore control of all the resources that came from the sea. So women would go out and hunt and kill seals. And seals were an immensely important resource for Aboriginal people back in those days. As you can imagine, nice fatty meat.
Yeah, huge food source.
Good for keeping you warm during the winter.
Yeah.
Yep. They were so proficient at this that they very quickly came to the attention of the sealers. And as well as women providing an opportunity for sex for these men, young girls and women were abducted and removed from their families, mostly around the east and the northeast coast of Tasmania, but also around Bruny Island as well.
Now, I've heard stories that sometimes the Aboriginal tribes would sell women to the sealers, or loan women to the sealers as part of a traditional something. How apocryphal is that story?
Well, this is really a case in point with Wara Te Mota Te Yenya. She was also known, she was referred to by the sealers as Bung, and there's a little corner, a little beach on Cape Barron Island called Bungses, which is named after her. The sealers would, by and large, take women, and there are lots and lots of stories told by Aboriginal women to George Augustus Robinson about how they were taken. One woman described how she was taken when she was barely able to crawl, and she spent her whole life with the sealers. So they were taking women and children. Wara Te Mota Te Yenya's father was Manalagena, who we spoke about in a previous program. And there are a couple of historical researchers who are of the view that because Manalagena was a chief, he, in an attempt to try and establish some sort of diplomatic relationship with the new arrivals, the British, provided his daughter to a man by the name of George Briggs, George Briggs.
Now, that might sound shocking to people, but really, that's what royalty have always done, haven't it? I mean, that you marry to secure alliances.
Absolutely. That's how families and nations have maintained order for as long as history goes. So it's quite possible that that she started her life as as part of those early diplomatic and treaty relationships in Tasmania between black and white. But the interesting thing about Wurrutamori-Yenna, and something that most people, when they think about Tasmanian Aborigines, would never imagine, is that she was a world traveller. Rather than just simply stay on her island and perhaps move between the coast and the mountains, depending on the seasons and the food supplies, she found herself as far away as Mauritius in the middle of the Indian Ocean.
How did she get there?
Well, towards the end of the sealing industry, as it was starting to peter out, sealers were having to go further and further to find seal. And she was taken with a group of other Aboriginal women. They were heading for the island of St. Louis. They weren't able to land on St. Louis, and they were dropped off by the captain of the vessel that was taking them on the island of Rodrigues. And the vessel didn't come back to pick them up. They eventually found their way to Mauritius, and they lived there for a number of years until the governor of Mauritius eventually petitioned the governor of New South Wales to pay for their return. Wurrutamori-Yenna eventually made her way back to Tasmania and then was taken by George Augustus Robinson to Wybalena.
Where so many of these stories end. Greg, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Rick.